What's going on?
Not much, brother. How are you?
I'm doing good. Doing good. Just actually watched the main event of the fight before signing on to talk with you.
Fuck yeah, man. I mean, Boston's own, bro. Massachusetts. Calvin Kattar. I mean.
Oh, absolutely. Dude, Calvin really impresses me. Not just because he's obviously got devastating knockout power, but I love how he can clearly be winning a fight and still be looking for the finish.
100%.
You know, yeah, because like in a sport where so many guys will sit on leads and then just kind of like refuse to engage, I mean, it's cool to see somebody who's still trying to win the entire time.
I mean, he said it best himself, right? He was like, we don't come from a place where, you know, we talk a lot of shit. Like, we just go in there and we fight. We try to finish fights. And that's it. And, I mean, he gave the big shout-out to Alexander Volkanovski. Said that he's looking to fight contenders. So, I think Calvin's one of them, man. I think he was number 6 ranked in this fight. And
I agree. And, I mean, honestly, I actually like his chances against Volkanovski.
Yeah,
you know, because like, I just think his size is so, you know, he's so much bigger. He's very rangy, and like, and Volkanovski kind of showed in the fight with Max on Saturday that when somebody uses their range well, he could struggle. And then Calvin hits a lot harder than Max does.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, holy shit, dude! I just remember that Shane Burgos fight. Like how smooth that combo was. You like literally, I think it was like every punch he landed on him had just kind of set him up to land another punch and to land another punch until eventually he landed that uppercut and just fucking slept him, dude. It was Calvin, bro, is just another breed of striker, and it's hard to really fight a guy like that, right? I mean, Danny Ige went 0-for-8 on takedowns the whole night, bro. Like Calvin's stuffing takedowns, and he's a monster on the feet, so. He's a tough fight for anybody at that division.
I agree completely. And so I'll be really excited to see what they do with them in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought the rest of the card was a little meh. A couple of exciting fights.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I mean, Tim Elliott, it was nice to see him fight. A lot of people thought Benoit or Ryan Benoit had won the last two rounds, but I disagree. I thought Tim Elliott literally outlanded him all three rounds, was peppering him with jabs. When it was on the ground, he was dominating. I mean, Benoit landed the harder shots. But other than that, I think that was the only real outlying fight other than the Abdul Razak Al-Hassan and Munir Lazzez fight, which, I mean, Abdul coming off of his lawsuit for the alleged sexual assault, but came in 4 pounds overweight. And he lost, so.
It was a fun fight, though.
It was a fun fight, though, dude.
Yeah, but he may be a monster, but entertaining.
He may have allegedly raped somebody, but. What do you thought of
your
fight?
Well, it's one of those, it's one of those things where hopefully that didn't happen.
Yeah.
But it is tough to really. It's tough to look past stuff like that while the allegations are active.
Not active. You know? I think they actually – he was, like, acquitted of everything. But still, it's like
– Oh, well, that's –
You never – Yeah, good, but you never know how accurate everything is these days, you know?
Yeah, and unfortunately, like – and that's why, like, it does kind of suck, you know, because, like, he could very well have been innocent. But that's the sort of thing that can hang over you. I mean, there are the rare instances, like, with – Kobe or Mike Tyson, where we will entirely forgive
Ben Roethlisberger. Fuck that fat fuck.
Yeah, dude. It's been like, how many women was that? Like 2 that we know of, like clearly. And it's like, but for whatever reason, I guess when you're great, nobody cares.
For sure, man.
But that's part of the reason why I think the Steelers are garbage and always will be.
100%. That's why I hate the Lakers too, bro.
Oh, dude, exactly. It's like, it's one of those things where just because somebody's a great athlete doesn't mean they can't be a piece of shit.
100%. Look at John Jones.
Yeah, dude, absolutely. And hey, at least as far as we know, he hasn't raped anyone.
Yeah, thank God. Maybe he slapped a stripper in a nightclub once in a place where he shouldn't have, but he got away with that, so all fine.
Yeah.
Scumbag.
And, how about Mike Perry? Blasting the guy in the bar.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I think we mentioned it But we didn't really get to see all of it in great detail. But holy shit, dude. I mean, apparently it wasn't just one guy. It was three people that he beat the shit out of. And the UFC pretty much sat him down and told him, listen, like, you've got some fucking mental issues you got to take care of, bro. And until you get that done, like, you're signed with us, but we're not giving you a fight until you get clearance from, like, an actual rehab.
That's good. And I think the UFC actually has a good history of making sure guys get help. Like, I remember when Rampage went on his actual rampage after losing to Forrest Griffin. Like, I think that was a similar scenario because he just, like, I remember reading just, like, went 3 days of, like, not eating anything and just drinking Red Bull and then flipped out and just, you know, was a menace all over town. Yeah. I remember Dana kind of got heat for standing by him, but he also made sure he got help.
Sure. I mean, that's the way to do it. I mean, I think for sure the UFC really does care. Like, I know for a lot of fighters, they help with surgeries when they can. They do everything they can to help people, except if your name is Jason Mayhem Miller.
Well, maybe he's not good enough to really warrant that. And because he did the, you know, he broke the cardinal rule where there are two things you can't do. You cannot, you can't sexually assault anybody. Yeah. And you can't be an objective racist.
Yeah, and you also shouldn't break into a church butt-ass naked covered in shaving cream. That's a very weird story.
Yeah, that is highly frowned upon. Well, dude, he had, like, so many just, like, bizarre instances. Like, wasn't he involved in, like, a hostage situation at some point?
Yeah, I mean, the guy was in the news probably, like, every 4 or 5 months for doing something absolutely absurd, which is crazy because at one point in time, I actually think that he gave a young GSP one of the hardest fights of his career.
Oh, yeah. No, he was legitimately talented.
Yeah.
And that's why it's a bummer that, you know, during a second stint in the UFC, they kind of got him at the tail end of his career.
Yeah. And I have to admit that Bully Beatdown was a fucking awesome TV show, dude.
It was. Like, that was such a guilty pleasure. But yeah, that was
100%.
Yeah, that was an awesome show. Yeah. But, dude, I remember there was that embarrassing episode. I think it was like Thomas Denny.
It was Thomas Denny. He got fucking dropped, dude.
Yeah, he didn't beat the bully at anything. He didn't submit him, and he got knocked out by, like, bro.
So bad. But I loved when they brought in guys like Arlovsky and, like, Eddie Alvarez, like, guys who are, like, literally killers to fight, like, Joe Schmoes, like, cage.
Yeah, dude. Well, that was the thing. Like, I know there was always the cloud of whether or not it was scripted and set up, and I'm sure it was.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, it was optically cool. I really, you know, I remember it was just a fun show.
100%.
You know, at a time when they were, I feel like at the time that came out, they were still really trying to figure out, like, where MMA fits within pop culture.
For sure.
And so they tried all of these, like, new things because the Ultimate Fighter was successful. So they had, like, Bully Beatdown. There was, like, do you see that weird Iron Ring show on BET?
Yeah, that was also fucking strange. I know that.
That was definitely, like, the worst of that. I remember there was a point where, like, Ludacris, who was, like, a team owner, was like, so what are we doing for these guys? It's
like, so, like, weird,
he clearly,
man,
didn't even understand the concept of the show. Yeah.
I know there was also, like, a bootleg, like, Bellator version of the Ultimate Fighter, too, right? With, like, Randy Couture as a coach and one other guy.
That was called Fightmaster.
Fightmaster, yeah.
Chip Morales-Pollard was actually on it. I was actually this close to getting on.
Really?
So I got deep into the process, but the issue that we had was you needed a minimum amount of fights. And at the time, half of my fights had been before the commission was involved. And I didn't have them on DVD or video either. You know, because again, I started fighting in 2007.
Yeah, of course.
That was before everybody put their shit up everywhere. And so they were like, dude, I'm sorry, but, like, you know, you know, your records say you're, like, 2-1. But I was really 5-1 at the time.
Yeah.
And they were like, but we need you to have a minimum of 4 fights. So, like, we really like you, but But yeah, I mean, which granted, I suppose I'm happy I didn't go and get knocked out by Joe.
Yeah, Wendell, sure.
Which is exactly what would have happened. Because like it was at 170 and I really needed to be fighting at 155.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, I know Joe Riggs ended up winning and he would have bounced my head.
For sure, dude. So hard. I love that, bro.
But yeah, I remember Chip made it on and he, I think he had a fight to get in the house and he lost.
I think it was against Daniel Spahn.
Oh yeah, that's right. I think you're
hard hitting. 170. I think he's actually a 185er, isn't he?
Yeah, and I know Chip fights a 185 now, yeah. But I mean, I think he can get away with that a little bit more in Muay Thai than he can in MMA.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, there's a lot more to guard you in Muay Thai than MMA, but still, regardless of the fact, Chip is a fantastic striker nonetheless, and I think if those guys were to fight now, it would be a different fight.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he's a world champion of Muay Thai now, and he's genuinely one of the best.
And he's a reigning defending Muay Thai champion. He's not just like a guy that won the belt, lost the next fight. He's fucking beating everybody up in all his fights.
Oh yeah, yeah. He is a special talent.
Absolutely. Did you hear the story about Jared Flash Gordon at Flat Island this weekend about how he lost his whole corner and Paul Felder and
No.
Oh man, so what happened was he trains at the same fight camp as Gilbert Burns. So the plan was that Gilbert's team would fly out with him to Flat Island and they would stay because he would have fought on the card, obviously, that happened last night. And then obviously that didn't work out because almost everybody tested positive for coronavirus, so his whole corner was gone. And so since he's been training at Rufus Sport a couple times with Paul Felder, he pretty much just called him and asked him, like, hey, is it possible for you to ask the UFC if you can corner me? So he pretty much got off the broadcast booth and fucking went into the corner to coach this guy, Jared Gordon. And a good friend of Jared Gordon also happens to be Gary Tonin, who was cornering Ryan Benoit. So the guy pretty much got Paul Felder, a top five lightweight, and Gary Tonin, one of the best no-gi grapplers on the fucking earth, to corner him in his fight.
That's awesome. How did he do?
He won, actually. He won 30-26 all three rounds.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, beat the absolute piss out of
him. Because that must have been so immensely stressful, too. You know, so I can't, I can't imagine, you're in the Middle East, and then your team can't even come.
Absolutely, dude. So you're just flying out. And then I think, imagine just the stress of thinking that your fight's probably canceled. You know, like, maybe they even just tell you, like, okay, listen, you've been training there at Sustainable MMA. Your whole team, pretty much everybody on the team so far has tested positive, all your coaches. Like, maybe they even just cancel your fight. But this guy's a monster, dude. He just fucking showed up. He knew his coaches weren't coming, and he fucking flew anyways.
And that's the way to do it, because, I feel like the UFC remembers that stuff.
For sure.
And plus, too, I feel like, with the current landscape that it is, guys just want to fight.
Yeah, for sure, man. Did you manage to get a chance to watch all the fights last week, the big card?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, those are fantastic.
For sure, man. Any fights on the undercard you liked?
I did really like that main event for the undercard.
Yuri Prachaya and Volkan Oezdemir.
Yeah, Yuri is a monster.
Yeah, dude, holy shit. I mean, I knew he was the Ryzen light heavyweight champion, and he's got like a lot of wins. He's got wins over Big Mo. Like, he's got a lot of wins over some game guys for sure. I think he knocked out CB Dolloway in his fight before coming to the UFC. I mean, I thought, honestly, Volkan was kind of getting better of the exchanges, but Yuri was landing the harder punches.
Yeah, I agree. And Volkan just really didn't seem to have a whole lot behind you. Like, because even when he was, like, touching them up, I mean, it just seemed like they had minimum impact compared to what Yuri was putting out.
Yeah, and I mean, really beautiful head kick in, like, literally the opening frame of the second round, and then just a solid 1-2 down the pipe to put you out, dude. And that was a big knockout. I mean, we've never seen – I mean, we saw Daniel Cormier fight Volkan and couldn't put him out cold. And Jiří goes in there and with a – I mean, to be fair, Volkan's fought a ton of tough dudes. Like, he's also fought Anthony Smith. He's fought, like, a lot of guys that could put his lights out, and Dominic Hayes included. And the only person to actually do it was Jiří Prochaska. So, I'm excited to have this guy in the UFC, bro.
Oh, me too. And I mean, I think 205 is one of those divisions that kind of has needed a facelift for a while.
Yeah.
You know, cause, you know, and that's always the burden of having a champion that's so dominant, is that it just diminishes everybody else.
You get kind of bored, right?
Yeah, oh, exactly. I mean, you know, because, you know, we saw the same thing years ago with GSP and Anderson Silva.
Yeah.
Like, they were here, and then everybody else was way the hell below them. And that's kind of hurting John Jones's bit now, because, you know, obviously he wants to get paid more, but nobody gives a crap. A, because he's unlikable, and B, because the result is already assumed.
Yeah, and he's also just never really taken the – I mean, he fought a lot of big fights when he was younger, but I feel like he had so many opportunities to, like, take, like, a super fight or, like, a big fight throughout his career. And I think, like, okay, it's fair enough. Like, if you want to just fight at 205 and you want to just, you know, dominate your weight class and be known as the greatest 205er ever, fine. But he wasn't just like a Chuck Liddell type that comes in. Like, he was one of those guys that had enough potential to be, like, the greatest of all time and, like, move up a weight class, fight at heavyweight, prove to everyone that he's the greatest of all time. And I just don't feel like he's doing it.
I agree. I mean, well, it's one of those things where part of what makes him so great is that he's so conservative. Like, he just really respects the hell out of everybody he faces.
Yeah.
And, but I think because of that, that's also dictated some of his decision-making.
Sure.
Because, yeah, I know at least for me, the reservation I have about calling him the greatest of all time is that he's only been in 205 his whole career.
For sure.
Whereas all of the other contenders for that title, you know, the made-up arbitrary one that we all like to talk about, but they've all fought at multiple divisions, you know? And, like, and that was also, too, what kind of, like, kept Demetrius Johnson out of it for me. You know, because I know he's the one who everybody likes to talk about as being the greatest of all time, too. But when he went up in weight, he lost to Dominic Cruz, I think twice.
Yeah.
And so, like, yeah. Now, granted, there's no shame in losing to Dominic Cruz. But I think, you know, it means a lot to be successful in 2 weight class.
Yeah, for sure. But I also like to think of it as terms of like the words pound for pound. Like, I understand that obviously, like, if you have a really talented 205er who's able to, like, dominate heavyweights and obviously all the way down the board of weight classes. But if you think about it just as far as skill sets, like if this fighter were able to make 205, to make heavyweight, to make 185, I kind of got to give it to DJ.
Yeah, I mean, I could certainly see that argument.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, that all comes down to what pound for pound means.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because, like I said, like, to me, my interpretation was always more, you know, how are you going to do sort of like without being relegated specifically to your.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
And that's why, like, going up and weight and being successful there means a lot.
Yeah, like what Conor did pretty much. And Cejudo and Daniel Cormier. Like, these guys are in discussion to be the greatest of all time for sure.
Oh, 100%. And I think, I think if Cormier beats Stipe, then he's at least the greatest heavyweight of all
time.
Yeah,
for sure.
But he's definitely, like, in the conversation.
Absolutely.
And, but yeah, and that's why, like, it's so weird. I've been thinking about sort of like all time greats a lot since the Michael Jordan documentary, The Last Dance, came out. You know, because, like, you know, he was obviously such an icon in his sport, and so what makes one in MMA?
It's honestly a hard question.
Know? Oh, it really is. I mean, a part of it is just the MMA is so new.
Yeah.
So you have, like, generational greats. Where, yeah, even if he was in his prime right now, Chuck Liddell would get smoked.
Yeah, for sure.
By a guy like John Jones. Just because, like, you know, he was just a guy with heavy hands, you know, good kickboxing, who in good wrestling, so we could stop takedowns. But now you need more than that to be successful.
Yeah.
But that said, he was still the, you know, one of the best when he was, you know, I mean, Rampage was always in Pride and it's 2-0 against him, but he was definitely in the UFC, at least, like the best of that period. So it is such a tough and tricky question.
Yeah, 100%, man. I mean, it's honestly probably the toughest discussion you'll ever have in terms of discussing MMA is to talk about who's the greatest of all time. There's so many different factors that play into it, different skill sets, different disciplines, you know, different periods of time, you know, like you said, like start, like being an MMA fighter, obviously in the mid 90s means nothing if you're an MMA fighter in 2020. Do you know what I'm saying? So it's a big discussion.
Oh, 100%. And also, what were your thoughts on the fight last Saturday?
I'm fucking super pumped that Rebus tapped out Paige VanZant. I mean, I was talking a lot of shit, and I told you that fight did not deserve to be the first fight on the card, which I think I was right because overall it was fucking boring. The Yuri Prochaya fight against Volkan Ozdemir, which I said should have been the first fight on the fucking card, wasn't. So, and it was a barn burner.
It was. And I mean, and I still think that, you know, Hebus is just a big middle finger to Paige, you know, for trying to, you know, sort of test the waters and all that. Because that's a tough, like, gambit for any of them to make. You know, when you say, I don't want to renegotiate, because generally, I believe they'll try renegotiating your contract when you still have a fight left.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so it's, you know, there's a rich precedent of when guys decide to fight it out and then negotiate that the UFC will give them a killer for their last one.
100%.
You know, because if nothing else, it just severely weakens it. And I think you could tell by Dana's comments after that he just wasn't impressed with Paige's whole stance on the whole thing.
Yeah. And I mean, she was talking a lot of garbage and talking a lot of garbage for someone in particular that even though they had injuries, didn't really fight that much and took pretty much 9 months off to do fucking Dancing with the Stars. So,
exactly. And that's why, you know, and I think we've talked about this a little bit before, but I think just she's not a fighter. No. And that's fine.
She's not a fighter. I mean,
you know, she's somebody who's pretty good at it, but that doesn't mean that she's in her soul.
You know what? I think that she honestly just joined the UFC at the right time, like a time of expansion where they were looking more for like athletes that knew how to fight rather than actual fighters, you know, just to kind of like excite a division up. And the fact that she's attractive also helps. The fact that she's extremely athletic also helps. And the fact that she was actually, for that time period, a decent fighter also helped. But we saw that, I mean, in her last three fights, I think her only win is against Rachel Ostrovich. So, I mean, no discredit from Rachel Ostrovich.
Yeah, it's like, and that was a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
You know, it's you know, and so that's why too, even if she were to go to like a place like Bellator and stuff, like how much mileage do you think they're gonna, you know, so if I'm Scott Coker, I don't know how much I get out of it.
Yeah, but also like you gotta think about the depth of female divisions in Bellator. I think Bellator is one of those places that they just don't give a shit about. I don't know, they're looking for somebody, for the individual. They wanna market the person. They're not trying to like,
yeah.
So you see that a lot with like I don't know, tons of guys like Aaron Pico. I bet you Paige VanZant, if she joined, they would market hard. Fedor, Ryan Bader was marketed super hard. Like, I think that they don't market divisions; they market fighters and fights. They market fights a lot as well.
Absolutely. I totally agree.
Yeah.
And I think Bellator is where she'll likely end up, especially since her husband already fights
there. Yeah, Austin Vanderford. I mean, but he's a good fighter.
He is. Oh, I mean, he's legitimately talented. It was funny seeing, like, all the incel rage at him when they got married.
Yeah.
And it's like, but though they are super obnoxious on social media. But yeah, I think she'll end up getting signed by them. But I mean, you know, I imagine she's asking for a pretty hefty price tag. So, like, is she worth that? So, like, I think that's where she'll end up. But I wonder how close to what she's asking for she'll get.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good question. I'm assuming that she'll actually get, like you said, get paid decent money. But as far as how active she'll be, that's a good question. And like I said, like Bellator loves to market like matchups. They won't market a card, you know, like Dana will come out and say, hey, every fight from top to bottom is fucking great. And I'm sure Bellator also believes it too, but the marketing strategy for the UFC is obviously way different than Bellator. So Bellator is one, like I said, marketing individuals, and two, they're marketing like matchups. You know, this is where they focus all of their marketing around. So I could see them kind of just like playing on the cards to get Van Zandt in there against somebody that's tough, and they'll market the fight and people will fucking tune in anyways, and it's all that bullshit. So let's see.
Definitely.
The next fight, pretty fucking solid. Namajunas Andrade matchup. Namajunas took the split decision. I mean, I kind of figured that she would correct her mistakes from the first fight.
Absolutely. I was just surprised that a judge gave Andrade 2 rounds.
I was just going to say that. I couldn't believe that.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Because I thought Rose clearly won the
100%.
First. You know, yeah, Andrade started to pick it up in round three. But, yeah, I mean, I thought they both looked fantastic. I mean, and Rose definitely seemed to get a little worn down in the third round, but their output was insane.
Yeah, 100% insane. I mean, regardless, super fun fight. And like you said, I have no fucking clue how the refs gave the judges gave Andre 2 rounds. I mean, like you said, first 2 rounds pretty dominant. I even think in the third round, like, okay, Andre landed the harder shots, but Rose ended that fight super strong, man. She was like not giving up in that third round either. So you could argue it was a swing round, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And, but man, the officiating at night in general is pretty terrible. As like, you know, like with the Aldo fight, like I was pretty sure that ref was just gonna let him die. Like that was what he was waiting for.
Yeah, holy shit,
holy
dude!
Crap!
He got that absolute, like, actually got the blood beat out of him. Like the canvas that whole night was clean, bro. The canvas was clean, and then Peter Yan came in there, you know, beat the shit out of him.
Dude, well, it's so unfortunate too, because Aldo looked so good up until he didn't.
Yeah.
You know, he for rounds 2 and 3, you know, it kind of almost looked like the Aldo of old. He was actually kicking again. He, you know, very precise, you know, crisp. He's just so not durable anymore. So I personally kind of hope he hangs it up after this, or just fights guys like Uriah Faber and rides it out.
Yeah, kind of like doing I saw a really funny comment the other day in the Minotauro versus Mauricio Shogun Hua matchup. And the comment was like, yeah, I mean, if these guys are going to be old and fight, like, they might as well just fight each other, right? So.
Oh, exactly. I mean, well, you know, and they've always like kind of done that unofficially, of like having kind of a seniors division.
Masters won.
Exactly. Well, because like, for instance, you saw it even with and I know we've talked about this before, but like when Bisping was champ, you know, he fought GSP and Dan Henderson while Robert Whittaker and Yoel Romero were fighting for the interim.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
You know what I mean? So like, they kind of, you know, gave him these they gave him the older guys, because that's, I mean, nobody wants to see a guy like Aldo get head caved in by a young up-and-comer like Peter Yan.
Yeah.
You know, it would have been amazing if Aldo ended up winning, but he got savagely fucked up, and the ref let it happen.
Absolutely savagely fucked up. And, I mean, props to Yan, dude. That guy's tough as shit. He took the punishment early, like – I don't think it looked like he was hurt at any moment in the fight. Like, Aldo was obviously doing well to go in and out, leg kicks, combinations. But in the end, dude, Yan is just too much for most of the people he fights. And he really deserved that. But like you said, horrible fucking stoppage. Like, they could have stopped that fight 40 seconds before it was actually stopped.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Aldo was just literally covering up and staying there, which is generally, I mean, honestly, a fighter's way of quitting without quitting. You know, because, like, if they were just in the street, I doubt Aldo would have just stayed there. You know, he would have rolled over, moved, or done something. But at that point, you know, because the referees in the back room, they tell you, if you do not intelligently defend yourself, if you're taking punishment, not moving, we are going to stop.
Yeah.
And so, like, I don't know, when they stop moving, just covering up, that means the ref's going to stop it. And that's what they want, while still holding on to their pride and not having to tap the strikes or get the light shut off. And but it must have been like 30 seconds, though, that just completely shot. And, it, you know, and honestly, like, those are the types of fights that are going to take years off your life.
100%, man. I mean, what do you think about the Holloway Volkanovski decision?
So I personally had Holloway winning rounds 1-3 and then losing 4 and 5. Yeah. I know 3 was pretty close. I personally thought it was clearly Holloway. That said, am I going to be one of those guys who's like, it was highway robbery, blah, 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 blah. No, because it happened. Yeah. But, you know, because in oftentimes too, like, it seems like the guy who does better towards the end is the one who's going to get it. And, I thought Holloway should run, but I've seen, you know, how about you? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the judges don't give enough credit for those knockdowns in rounds 1 and 2. I think that, I mean, if you look at the differential in volume between both those fighters in rounds 1 and 2, it's non-comparable. It was like, okay, the fight only started to get close in round 3. Plus rounds 1 and 2, both rounds were finished by knockdowns. So how are you going to, like, you know, edge a 10-9 to Volkanovski in rounds 4 and 5 for late takedowns? But you're not going to give a round that obviously Holloway dominated the round and knocked you down a 10-8. You know what I'm saying? So I think if anything, there needs to be like a little bit of judging restructuring. And
absolutely. I mean, you know, because I know in boxing, a knockdown is automatically a 10-8. Yeah. And, you know, and that's how I think it should be. I mean, maybe just because in MMA, I think there's more like flash knockdowns than in boxing. So it's more common. So they try to avoid doing that.
Yeah.
But I know they've been trying, you know, at least they've been saying for a while that they're going to be more liberal with 10-8 rounds. But I've just seen it.
Yeah. I mean, in my opinion, I think it sounds kind of douchey. It kind of was like a pretty solid robbery. Like, I do see how Volkanovski won rounds 4 and 5. I can understand from, like, who's watching that he could have, in another dimension, swayed round 3. But I think that the first two rounds, like, with those knockdowns and with the strike differential, and even in the third round, obviously Holloway outstruck him, was stuffing everything that came at him. I mean, props to Holloway for not making a big deal about it, because he knows these things happen and he knows there's worse things going on in the world. But I think he comes back super strong, man. I think Holloway is always going to be there, top 3 for a while now. And there's no doubt in my mind that he wins the title back at some point.
Yeah, I mean, that would definitely be cool. It does make it tougher to book that fight again, because now we've seen it twice and the same guy got his hand raised both times.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I'd like to see them do it again at this point, just because I don't agree with the decision.
Yeah.
I mean, it's tough. I think there needs to be more standardized criteria for judging. Sure. So that it is a little less subjective, because I think a lot of it is just subjective. It's based on their opinion, you know. But if they had more standardized sort of like points or whatever for certain things, then I think that could go a long way to make it so that they're a little robbery though I wonder if part of it is the simple fact that it's Saudi Arabia and they didn't have experienced judges there. I mean, did they list the judges?
They did. I think they might have outsourced the judges.
Yeah, because I'd be wondering, you know, I'd be surprised if it's the ones that, like, the UFC generally uses, because, you know, it's usually the same handful of people.
Yeah, sure. I really liked it when Ricardo Almeida was judging, man. It's a good guy to have as a fucking judge.
I mean, honestly, I really do think they should be former fighters. Yeah. Unfortunately, it's more so not just raising their hand.
Yeah, they're like judges at like an Olympic figure skating contest, and all of a sudden they're like watching MMA fights and fucking throwing 10-8 rounds at people that don't deserve them.
Well, and I do think, too, there should be the opportunity for judges to have to defend their decision.
Sure.
You know, like, as part of, like, the post-fight press junket, have to say, well, we gave, you know, this is what we saw.
100%.
And, you know, and because that would, if nothing else, help dispel, a lot of the bullshit that gets around decisions like that.
For sure, man. How'd you think of Masvidal's performance? I know he came up short, but I thought overall he looked pretty slick.
I mean, I thought he did very well against somebody who was determined to not actually engage in
a fight.
I mean, yeah. I don't fault Usman. He kind of, like, did what he was supposed to do. But Masvidal, I thought, looked good. He was clearly out of shape, which I guess I was kind of disappointed in, because, you know, I know he's one of those guys who says he's always ready, and I'm sure he is mentally, but physically he just wasn't.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, because you could tell he understood that he had a limited gas tank. But I mean, like, I thought, especially around one, he looked really good.
Yeah, and you could obviously see, like, the difference in striking levels. Like, when we watched the Colby Covington, Usman fight. I mean, it looked like those guys were like professional kickboxers in there, ripping to the body, throwing straight punches. But then you get a guy like Masvidal in there, who, I mean, this guy's been striking since he was, what, like fucking 18 years old in Kimbo Slice's backyard. And he said he'd be waiting at McDonald's for Kimbo to come pick him up and offer him a fight. And, I mean, this is a guy that's obviously been striking for a very long time, and you could see the difference in the fight.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, in Usman, you know, he fought smart. It wasn't the most aesthetically appealing fight, but it was exactly what he needed to do. And so, I mean, you know, he even said prior, like, if it takes 20 takedowns, I'll hit him with 21.
Yeah.
And that's just how he needed to do to fight Masvidal, because that's also how you get him tired. And so if I was fighting somebody who's coming up on under a week's notice, I know I'd be doing everything I could to drain their gas tank. And that's best done by ugly grinding wall wrestling. But it just makes for a generally unentertaining fight.
For sure. And then obviously those strike differentials that you see on the big screen are like bullshit. Like, okay, like Masvidal landed, what, like 84 strikes. Then it's showing that like Usman landed like 231. But it's like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, I understand that, like, okay, he was up against the fence and getting hit with, like, little foot stomps and little belly tickles and fucking all this other bullshit, but God damn it, man.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, a foot stomp just really shouldn't count. Like, I'm sure it could be uncomfortable. I mean, I think I only had, like, one guy in one of my fights that throw foot stomps at me. I don't remember really being super affected by it, but that said, I also wasn't fighting somebody within the same league of Kamaru Usman. But, you know, that just can't mean as much as a right to the face.
Yeah, 100%. But overall, I kind of did agree with a lot of what Masvidal said after the fight, and that obviously I can't vouch for him because I'm not in his own mind, but if he was given like a full 8-week camp to figure Usman out, you know, like really sit there with coaches and study film and make a game plan and go out there and execute, I think that it would have been a different fight.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I personally do hope he gets another shot. and the fight seems to have been universally reviled, and so I don't know how excited the UFC is at the prospect. Yeah. But rumor has it that did over 1 million pay-per-view buys, and if that's the case, that would make this, you know, the biggest like non-Conor McGregor pay-per-view they've had in a very long
time. Yeah, I mean, Dana actually came out and said it.
Yeah, and so because of that, they may be trying to book. I mean, Masvidal's a star.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, people, you know, this is, and so I personally love to see a, you know, full camp that with them fighting, but then, you know, you've got to figure Usman's going to have one too.
100%, man. But, I mean, Usman was preparing for, in my opinion, a harder opponent than Masvidal. So I think.
I agree, or at least the Masvidal that showed
up. I'm saying for the styles, though. Yeah, and like you said, the Masvidal showed up. I think that Masvidal is always going to be game on the ground, but he's not a world championship jiu-jitsu black belt. You know, like there's different calibers of ground game, and like we mentioned all the time, there's different levels to this shit. And I think there's a big difference between taking Masvidal down to the ground and taking a guy like Gilbert Burns down to the ground.
No, absolutely. And so I'll be interested to see what comes out of this. I know, I doubt we're going to be seeing anything while they're still out on Yaz Island. Yeah. But I'll be interested to see what future matches come up. Because I think at the moment, like, the one I would like to see the most would just be the Masvidal rematch.
Yeah.
Just because, I want Masvidal to have that full camp. But yeah, I mean, Gilbert Burns is a great fight too, and so it's, you know, it's tricky. It's good that they have a lot of options.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we got Benavidez Figueiredo coming up. Week after that, we got Robert Whittaker versus Darren Till. Some good fights. So thanks for listening, guys, and please tune in next week. Cheers, bye.